It's time for JT the Brick on Fox Sports Vegas.
So here we go with the Vegas Golden Knights.
Hey, since Christmas, it's a whole different team.
We're just playing strong defensive hockey.
This team is playing at a very high level.
Knights win their sixth in a row.
They prove that they're a playoff team.
Feeds Tuck in front, he shoots, he scores! Alex Tuck wins it!
I'd be pretty happy as a Vegas Golden Knight fan.
I'm all in, brother.
And for Gallant, I think he's pretty happy.
Yeah, real happy.
Way to go, Golden Knights. I mean, what a run. What a run they've been on.
Carlson scores from the left wing!
The radio show's priority is the flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights.
I'm all in, brother.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Well, great to have you back, JT, with you inside T-Mobile Arena, right at Dan Duva's perch here in the booth. We just had on George McPhee. We appreciate that. Gary Lawless was kind enough to join us, and defenseman Nick Holden, all in the first hour, as we are bringing you Fan Appreciation Night. The pregame, I've seen the pregame video already. If you're a season ticket holder and you're coming to the game, it will blow you away. I'm not going to give it away. I said I wouldn't give it away, nor would I ever do that, but I wish I could because I just saw it again. It's incredible. What they do pregame is like nothing else in sports. You will be blown away tonight if you're a season ticket holder or just picking up a ticket coming into this game. So we're excited about that. I'm excited to talk to Tony Sanchez, the head football coach of UNLV, as I'll be out there. Excited for the spring game coming up on Saturday. Coach, thanks for a few minutes as we're live inside the fortress. How are you?
Hey, good. Doing a little good. Good to hear from you.
Coach, first off, before we get to football, you've been to hockey games here. I'm broadcasting from the broadcast booth in here. This hockey team and the impact it's had on you, your family, when you come to these games, how much fun do you have?
Oh, it's an absolute blast. I mean, what a great addition the Knights have been to the city of Las Vegas. You know, Foley does everything first class, and, you know, obviously, you know, success they had last year. But, and you were just talking about it, not just the success on the ice, but, I mean, just the way they've created such an entertainment, you know, deal out there. I mean, it's just a fun experience to get out there.
Coach, speaking of first class, the construction update from you, I've been seeing a lot of the social media coming in on what's happening at the complex there. Get us up to speed because it looks fabulous, and I know it's a big part of building the program to a level where you want to see it.
Yeah, you know, we talked about that, you know, when I took the job in December of 14, you know, and here we are, you know, getting close to the finalization of the construction. So it's been a lot of hard work. You know, we've had to knock on a lot of doors, get a lot of people in our community to invest in us, and we're really grateful for that. But it's a beautiful facility. I mean, it's really coming along. It's more than we ever could have expected. I mean, when we did the designs, we knew it'd be beautiful, but it really is kind of blowing our expectations out of the water.
And, Coach, you're a grinder. You're a football guy. You live this your whole entire life. What's it like with your time requirements when you have to go look at that? You're on a tour. There's a new football stadium coming. We'll leave that for another day. But this is a big part not only of your vision, the vision of the Fatitas, the campus, everybody getting involved with something that's going to be state-of-the-art.
No, it is. I mean, it truly is a community effort. But, I mean, we've already seen the impact it's had on recruiting, you know, this last class, this upcoming class. I mean, heck, you know, before the spring game, we got some recruits coming on up. We get to, you know, run them through there, show them the facility. It just creates such a buzz, you know, for everything going. Now the last piece is for us to go ahead, you know, and get ourselves in the postseason and start to do it consistently. And, you know, we've done some good things, but now we got to get over that hump. You know, we got to, you know, do our best to stay injury-free. And I believe we got the competitive depth now to handle some of those things and some of those setbacks we've had in the past. But it's an exciting time. You know, building is one of those things that can get frustrating, you know, to the outside person at times. But when you know what you're doing, you believe in what you're doing, and, you know, and you see the progress, you know, on the field, you see it, you know, in the classroom, you know, you see it with people investing in it and facilities being built. And it's a fun thing to be a part of. We just got to finish it off now.
Tony Sanchez joins us. Coach, let's stay with that recruiting class, your largest one. You tie it into the new facility. What has recruiting been like for you? I'm getting to know the roster, a couple of new players coming in. What's the big takeaway from this recruiting class as you're seeing the players now on the field?
Well, I tell you what, it's a very athletic class, you know, more ready-made players. I mean, they got the bodies and the physicality to come on in and play. I mean, even some of the high school kids we brought in, you know, Jacoby Windham, you know, Kyle Beaudry, you know, those are two guys playing linebackers. In the past, those guys, they've been about a year or two away from stepping on the field just physically, but these guys they're big, they're strong. Adding some of the junior college guys we have, Dick Vermontes, he's been a great get for us. I mean, not only is he a great football player, he's been good for the locker room, just got a really good presence about him, so excited about that. And, you know, and really, too, sometimes it's, you know, the years of recruiting on top of each other. Like, for example, you get a Miles Plummer who came in last year and just, you know, he'd been in a junior college, hadn't really been eating away that, you know, he should, and it wasn't really his fault, didn't have the resources for it, was, you know, a little overwhelmed by the system and just was a little insecure on the football field. Now you see him a year later, and, man, he's having a great spring. He reminds me of Robert Jackson. Robert struggled his junior year, had a great senior year. Now he's in his third year in the league. So it's one of those deals where you got to bring guys in and keep developing them, and we're really starting to see that, especially with this class.
Coach, in depth for you, someone that if you have better players at better positions, not only on game day when you decide to sub them in and who's going to play, but how does that help this team at practice every day when you have real battles at depth positions with players who are fighting for their job and you're telling them, look, if you're on the team, but if you want to get more playing time, you have to win these battles every day. How enjoyable has that been?
It's big time. I mean, we talk about creating a culture of competition, and that's exactly what it does. I mean, you know, you take the offensive line. There's 10 guys on the old line that have started games before, so they all know what it's like to be a starter at some point, and there's only five of them are going to start. So that's the one thing we've seen is, you know, now as we come into this, you know, going into year five, each year we've had guys that have started, and some young guy, you know, maybe they're redshirted or just played sparingly, had a better offseason, and it's taken another guy's job. So, hey, it's a good thing to see. You want that competition every single day.
What did Armani Rogers do in the offseason? Because he's already so big and athletic and strong. What expectations did you set for him, not only with workouts and trainers and getting him to the next level? Because he seems like he's so gifted and he'll naturally take that next step.
Yeah, the big thing with him is now, you know, being a leader. You know, I mean, it's that burden of leadership, but it's also a blessing, too. And, you know, he's got to be that guy. I mean, I think that, you know, when he walks into a room, he lights it up, and I know the players believe in him, and, you know, they want to follow him, and the fans are excited about him, and it's just one of those things that come with being a Division I starting quarterback, and especially one that has all the ability and the attributes that he does. So he's done a good job. You know, he's just every day coming on out, and you've got to be that kind of that thermometer for the team, get everybody going in the right direction, and you got to be above board on everything. You know, you got to be the first guy in. You got to be more prepared. You got to be more energetic, and you know, everybody will feed off him. So that's one of the big things we talked to him about through the offseason.
Tony Sanchez joins us. And, Coach, I find that being around quarterbacks at the NFL level or college level and see it, when you look in his eyes, you know he's bigger than Baker Mayfield or Kyler Murray, much bigger and stronger than Josh Rosen, who went to Arizona. So you got a guy here who's gifted, and does he see the big picture on the unique style that he has and the gifts that he brings to the table? Because it shouldn't be that hard of a story for him to understand, because there's not many athletes like him in Division I.
No, there's not. You know, I mean, and he's going to do some great things with his legs. And obviously we talk about developing his accuracy. That's one of the big things. And but he's got a very unique skill set. There's not, like you said, there's not a lot of guys in Division I football that have the skill set that he does. And when you look at our offensive production and when he's playing and compared to when he's not, it's night and day. So, you know, we believe we stay healthy. You know, we've got an offensive line and we've got a good backfield, you know, like our receiving core right now. But with him at the helm, and if he stays healthy, I think we have a chance for a hell of a year.
Coach, a sideline-to-sideline linebacker or a safety who can run downhill and make big plays, let's spend some time on your defense and what you like about the competition, what we could see at the spring game, and the depth that you have on defense with your athletes.
Yeah, I tell you, you know, Farrell Hester's a returning starter, and he's bringing Vic Ferramontas in, and they play the same position. So now you got two guys that are just, I mean, you ought to see this battle. It's phenomenal. I mean, Farrell's raised his game to a whole other level. He's such a sharp, intelligent guy. You got Vic, who's just, you know, playing his tail off and grinding. So now you got two guys at that spot. And you know what? You can play two guys at that spot. And there's different packages where you may see him on the field at the same time. There'll be times where, you might have Farrell in based on situational stuff and or Vic. You get guys like David White and Gabe McCoy that are coming back. And, man, those guys, they look like fifth-year seniors. I mean, their bodies, they're finally keeping the weight on. They're very confident. They're great communicators on the football field, great leaders. And those are two of our biggest leaders. And then, you know, young guy, Malachi Salu, a kid that we redshirted last year. He played in the first four games, and then we redshirted him after that. I mean, man, he's really toned his body up. He's a big, strong kid, about 240 pounds, and he's got a heck of a camp. So there's a lot of guys in there that are really pushing for depth.
Coach, as we wrap it up and you look to become bowl eligible, what is exciting about that schedule, concerning the travel overall, and as you get your team ready, as we get ready for the spring game, what are you preaching about that schedule?
Well, I think you got to come out of the gates good. I mean, you got Southern Utah at home, and then you got a tough Arkansas State game at home, and, you know, that's a game that, you know, we could have got back last year, fumbled the punt inside our own 10, ended up losing by 7. So, you know, I think it's important for us to come out of the gate strong those first two games before we head on the road to play Northwestern. And after that, you have a bye, and then you you go on the road to Wyoming and come home for Boise. So, I mean, that's a fun beginning, and I think there's a chance to go out there and still a good handful of wins right there, and it's going to be important to do so. And then that big meet in the middle, you're on the road for a long time. I think there's a 6 or 7 week stretch where we only play twice at home, so we're going to have to become road warriors and really dial it in.
Coach, last one, your message to the Rebel fans here, especially with the spring showcase. What do you need to see from this fan base? I said this with Marvin Menzies, who was a friend before Coach O, Dave Rice before that, you and the connection to Gorman and how the success you're having now. What do the fans need to understand about supporting this team more often, getting involved in the community more, and your expectations on the fans coming into the showcase in the season?
Yeah, you know what? We want their support. We want their support for our kids. You know, I mean, again, you know, it's that whole 12th man attitude. You know, our guys, I mean, you look at the way they started the year last year and look at the way they ended it when we got healthy. Got an opportunity to be a pretty darn good football team, and it'd be a hell of a deal to get the whole community riding along with us the whole way. It's no different than being at Vegas at a blackjack table, right? You got a couple chips left. You can go home with them or you can put them all in. So we're asking everyone to push them all into the middle.
Absolutely. We're behind you, Coach. Thanks so much for making time. We'll see you out there Saturday.
All right. Take care. Go Rebs.
You got it. There he is. Tony Sanchez, who we wanted to get in today because I wanted to have a Vegas feel with everything we're doing here with the Golden Knights. I'm behind him. One of my best friends, his son's on the team. So he grew up around me, and now he's playing offensive line. I'll leave names off the air, but it's got my family engaged more than I've ever been because I want to see this kid do really well. And the connections, both my sons go to Gorman and play football at Gorman. Tony Sanchez, coach there, now going to UNLV. I want him to do well. And I clearly believe that he deserves to have this job and keep this job. Everybody's looking at Tony wins and losses and Desiree and bowl eligible and all that. And I get that. But the Fertitta complex and what's happening there has a lot to do with this. Now the coaching, as it steps up and the players who are coming in become better players, the JUCO transfers, the high school players that are coming in, I hope he has the ability to win games and become bowl eligible this year. And I'd say this to him, and I'd say it to him now or when I see him on Saturday. He needs to win games. Football coaches are evaluated with wins and losses. Who knows that better than Tony Sanchez? He grew up a Raider fan. He's a diehard lifer when it comes to football. He wants to win, and he knows the clock is ticking, and this group of players has got to win for him. And, you know, when I was at that game, the game against UNR at the end, Jay Norvell's a really good friend, the head coach there. He was the coach for the Raiders when the Raiders went to the Super Bowl after the 2002-2003 series. And I'll see Jay up at Fred Biletnikoff's event in a couple of weeks. I like Jay Norvell a lot, and I like Tony Sanchez a lot. But it's going to come down to who wins that game, who wins the cannon, who's bowl eligible. Because it's the same thing with Nevada or UNLV. I've said this with basketball and football. These programs are big enough where they should be competing for the tournament every year in basketball. I mean, in the tournament and winning the Mountain West, and in football, with this new football stadium coming online with the Raiders and UNLV, expectations are much higher to win now. And I believe that Tony Sanchez can do that because I know this recruiting class and a couple of the players he has coming in. I wanted to ask him as we wrapped it up about the schedule, because what's hurt this team over the last couple of years is the schedule. They lose games that they're supposed to win against teams that they have to beat, and they lose those games. And then they're in games. The USC game was a good example. They were in that game early. But when we talk about Arkansas State and we talk about some of the other schools in the Mountain West, knock them out. Throw a punch and beat them. You shouldn't be losing to Air Force. You got to beat Arkansas State. You got to beat Reno. You got to beat these teams, and then the rest will fall in place. I think it's the perfect storm. Looking forward to going out to the spring game, seeing how this team looks. He talked about 10 offensive linemen. That, to me, is important. The depth, they're a bigger offensive line than they've been the last couple of years, the biggest one he's had. They'll be more physical. They'll be able to run it better. But really, doesn't it come down to the quarterback? I mean, I have been praising Armani Rodgers for a while. You walk up to him and you see him, and he is gifted. If you've been next to Randall Cunningham, you know what I'm talking about. 6'5", 225. I'd like to know what his exact weight is this year, if he's up to 230, 235, whatever it is. He is a mountain of a man. He looks like a power forward in the NBA. He can throw it and spin it. He can run, and he can run downhill. I can promise you that Tony Sanchez will put him in a situation this year where he's running on third down and living and dying on picking up first downs by putting his body on the line. I just hope the kid stays healthy. Just like Fleury tonight is back in the net for the Vegas Golden Knights. You need Fleury to be healthy for this team. You need Amari Rodgers to play well and to be healthy for this team to do something special. Like to get back to the phones, which were great in the first hour. When we come back, 876-1340, we had three Golden Knights in the first hour. I want to get back to your phone calls before Barry Tompkins joins us on what was the hook? What brought you in to this family of VGK? What was the game, the moment, the memory that you had that made you a diehard fan of the Vegas Golden Knights? 876-1340, JT, live inside T-Mobile, courtesy of PT's.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have the time of 1 minute 5 seconds in round number 10. Our referee stops the contest. He is the winner by way of technical knockout and still undefeated, Floyd Money Mayweather.
Has there been any Floyd sightings lately? JT, back with you. Has there been any Floyd sightings? I wasn't planning on hearing that. I'm happy Bobby played it. But I don't recall the last time I heard about Floyd with a basket full of suitcase, full of cash going to the M. You remember when Floyd would post all of his winning tickets all the time on social media? I'm dead serious when I say this. Does anybody remember the last time there was a Floyd bet that went off big and someone remembers the ticket? I don't. And I know he's making money and I know he's spending money. My former partner, Tom Looney, always said that eventually Floyd will be broke. He will be broke because he will just spend all his money gambling. And I agree with that. And I think Floyd's going to need to fight again for unfortunate reasons. The news with Conor McGregor lately has been kind of bizarre. But I wanted to talk to one of the best broadcasters I've ever met, ever worked with. Barry Tompkins is a legend. Showbox, the next generation, coming up here on Friday. Samstown Live here in Vegas. And great to catch up with him again. Barry, thanks so much for the time. I appreciate it. How you been?
I've been good. It's a pleasure to be with you, JT. Good to talk to you.
Great talking to you again. You believe this? I've hosted hundreds of remotes in my life, but I'm inside the Fortress T-Mobile Arena before the hockey game tonight with the Vegas Golden Knights. They're already in the playoffs. Did you ever believe that hockey would ever work in Vegas? And now we're talking about a playoff team every year.
Isn't that amazing? No, you know, what a great story they were last year, though. I mean, that had to give you something to talk about for 6 months. You know, I mean, it's one of the great success stories, you know, for a first-year team ever, I would have to think.
Yeah, it was incredible. And, Barry, you've called so many big fights in Vegas. Before we get to this card, walk me through, because T-Mobile is just amazing. You know that. Build it, they will come. But when we go to the outdoor fights at Caesars back in the day, when the MGM was built for the first time and you called fights there, the Caesars fights, walk me through your history of boxing in Vegas when it started.
Well, you know, it was a very different world, obviously. And the venues, while they were big, they weren't anywhere near what they are now with the T-Mobile. And even at the MGM Arena, which, to the best of my knowledge, seats about 12,000, they were generally billed like some of the biggest fights I did, like Leonard Hearns and Leonard Hagler, were at Caesars Palace. And they just kind of erected, a stadium out back on the tennis courts. So I don't know what they sat, but I doubt it was ever more than 6,000 or 7,000 people. So it was a different kind of event and a different feel about the event. But by the same token, you know, at that time, I think now there are something like 60 champions. You know, truly it's my business, and I bet I can't name 15 of them. You know, but at the time there were fewer champions, there's still a lot, but fewer champions. And so the fights were bigger just because there were less, fewer of them, you know. And I was so lucky, you know, to be calling fights at HBO in the 80s, and I've done it ever since then, too. But those were really like the halcyon days, and there was one big fight after another. And I've always said, and JT, you've been around sports for a long time and been around a lot of different sports for a long time. To me, a really big championship fight is the greatest event in sports. That and the Kentucky Derby, which to me is the best event in America. But there's something special about it, and it's about the anticipation, and it's that first burst of sound, like when the crowd first sees the fighters and they start into their ring walks. That's more than just a cacophonous sound. It's you can actually feel it. You know, it goes way beyond just hearing it, and that's what makes a big fight the event that it is.
Barry Tompkins is our guest, one of the great broadcasters of our lifetime. And you know, I came around the scene when it was a good time with Tyson. I saw the Tyson Holyfield fights. I was there for Bite Night. But then we had this run of Trinidad, De La Hoya, Pacquiao, Floyd. And Barry, all the years on the radio, fight fans would call me and say, well, it's not what it used to be. And I'd say, you're crazy. We're living in the Mayweather, Pacquiao, De La Hoya era, the largest pay-per-views. They went up, up, and up, and we saw some great fights, but we didn't see the heavyweights. I want to go back to when you were calling those fights you talked about with Hearns and obviously Leonard and Hagler and those great fights. What were those pre-fight meetings like for you when you were one-on-one with these legends, knowing the size of the audience that were going to tune in to watch you call those great epic bouts?
Yeah, you know, the truth be told, those meetings really haven't changed very much. They're pretty much the same now as they were then. There's a lot more people in there now, but you know, you get a chance. Most fighters, this is the other thing I've always found, I'd rather work with fighters than any other athlete, you know. And the reason is you ask them a question, almost to the number. You ask them a question, they look you in the eye, and they give you a really honest answer. And you don't find that in football or basketball or baseball. You know, you get, you know, we play them one at a time. You get all the cliches, you know. Fighters aren't like that at all. And you ask them something, and they give you an honest answer. And the other thing I've always really liked and admired about fighters is they're not the most violent people I've met in sports. Football players are a lot more violent than fighters. And I think the reason is the only thing and the only time they have to prove is those, you know, that hour and 15 minutes in that 18-foot square. And they're in a pair of shorts and a pair of gloves. And, you know, they don't have armor on. You could just see them all out there. So as a result of that, when they're out of the ring, they're really good, decent guys. And one last thing is, every football player plays hurt. Baseball players, you know, historically, they're not what you would refer to as great athletes. NBA players are, obviously. But at the highest rankings of boxing, the biggest fights, if you're 98% going into that ring, you lose. So as a result of that, there's fewer drug problems, there's fewer alcohol problems, there's fewer womanizer kind of problems in boxing. It happens a lot of times after the guy stops fighting. But while he's fighting and while he's fighting at the top level, you don't see any of that. It's a really different sport.
Barry, before we get to the card again, I just want to ask you one more follow-up on your career in all of broadcasting. What I find amazing now are people asking me about The Zone and how that's going to work streaming, ESPN Plus, and you get along with everybody. You have executive buddies at Showtime, at HBO. Is everybody going to get along? Because I go furious when we can't make the Anthony Joshua fight with Deontay Wilder, and I'm seeing promoters who are separating the fighters and not letting the fighters get into the business together and fight in their prime. We saw that with Floyd and Manny Pacquiao more so than anything. You're behind the scenes with all of the individuals who are trying to put these bouts together. Is it getting tougher, or do you think we're getting to an easier road coming up?
No, I don't, unfortunately. I think it's getting worse. And that's a shame, because we're never going to see the real, or we may see them, but oftentimes we'll see them when they're a little bit on the other side of the hill, you know, because it takes that long to make the fight. And it's getting worse now, because you basically have Al Haymon, who provides fighters for Fox and for us at Showtime. Then you have DAZN, they're a real player now. There's no getting around it. And they're signing really top-notch fighters. And then you have Top Rank, who has ESPN. and never the twain, you know, and it's a real problem. I think eventually we will see Wilder and Joshua, but it's going to take two or three more fights, I think, because now Wilder is still with us at Showtime. Joshua is with DAZN. And, you know, that's somebody's going to have to jump ship in order to make that fight. And I think we've already seen the effect of, you know, HBO is now out of the boxing business, and I think that's one of the reasons. I'd like to tell you, JT, that it's getting better, but I honestly think it's getting worse.
Barry, tell us about Showbox and Next Generation, this card here, which is fantastic. When you're involved with it, it elevates the card. I love everyone on this broadcast. Why are you so excited about this one?
You know, I like this series in general, because what this series is all about is putting guys on who are, they're trying to get make that jump from a prospect to contender, you know, and usually when they leave Showbox, and we might have them for two or three fights, when they leave Showbox, they go to a championship fight. And so what happens with these guys, and these three guys who are in Mayweather's camp that we're going to see here in Vegas tomorrow, is that they get tested for the first time. They've been in there with guys who they should beat. Most of them are undefeated. By the time they get to us, they're usually, you know, 11-0, 12-0, 13-0, somewhere in there. And so this is the first time that they're really going to get tested against somebody who might punch them back. And I think over the course of the time that this series has been on the air, we've had something like, I want to say, like 190 fighters who came into the fight undefeated and lost. So, and also we've had a like number go on to be champions. That's what I like about this series. So we not only get a chance to see, you know, the guys who are going to be fighting for titles and winning titles in the next year or two, but we get to see him be tested for the very first time. And that's the case in this fight at Samstown tomorrow.
We'll be tuning in also with Steve Farhood on the call, Raul Marquez. I love everything you do, Barry. Great to connect with you again. I hope we can do it again. Please come on and keep promoting these fights, because I love watching a fight where you're on the call. It makes it big. It makes me feel great about it, and I love having you on the radio.
I really appreciate it. Happy to do it anytime, JT. Really good to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you. Barry Tompkins, who... I have a cool little story with him, because Don King hired me to work the locker room for a fight in Chicago, and he was on the call. And I was with Barry for a weekend in Chicago, and he brought me in, kind of told me what I needed to do, kind of walked me through it. It was a pretty big stage working the locker room, and I'll never forget that. You have one moment with someone in broadcasting, it stays with you forever. Johnny Katz is going to join us next. His column is big. He knows exactly what's happening. And tonight's a big night in Vegas. We're going to talk to him about that. What's going to happen as the Hard Rock transitions to Virgin. The Palms is opening up. Their new nightclub, pool, everything that's going on there. Hockey tonight. Vegas Golden Knights, Arizona Coyotes, and the future of Vegas and how we all fit in. Johnny Katz live in the booth with me coming up next on the Las Vegas Sports Network.
In front of the Oilers bench, Eakin from the right circle rips it home. Knights take a 1-0 lead on Cody Eakin's 22nd goal of the season.
JT, back with you as we're live at T-Mobile. Turn up to Barry Manilow, because that was the last time I saw Johnny Katz, and his Twitter feed and his Instagram, the Man About Town columnist with the Review Journal. You were at that show. That looked like a fun time.
I went with my family, was in town, and I went to see Barry at the Westgate International Theater, the old Elvis Presley Theater. It's a great show. It's a great Las Vegas show. And Barry Manilow, whether you own a lot of Barry Manilow music or not, he puts on a great show, and he's a star.
Isn't that important? Because you see all the shows in town, and I wanted to talk about that and where Vegas is going in the future. When you see someone who is in their 60s or 70s, and they still want to put out a quality show and give everything they got, those are special nights.
You know, it's funny, but most of the residency headliners, or a lot of them, fit that age.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or even higher. You know, I was just interviewing, last week I interviewed James Taylor and John Fogerty. They're both up there. They're in the Woodstock era age.
Yes.
And, you know, what Las Vegas what it requires is somebody who knows how to deliver what the audience wants. You have to get it to do one of these extended runs or mini residencies or residencies, whatever we're calling them today. And the ones that do well know that they have to bring their hits and play them well, and do enough shows to almost sell out and make a profit for their booking partner and their host hotel. And that's what we're seeing right now.
I think Warwick,
I just, you know, she's opening tonight over at the old Jubilee Theater. She's another one. You know, a lot of hits, and a legacy artist, they call them. Somebody who has hits over several generations.
Now, are they big money makers for the casino properties? Because if you look at the amount of fans they're bringing in, the steakhouses, the bar bills, and all of that, you know, for Britney Spears to J-Lo to some of the bigger ones, walk me through the birth of the residency as far back as you know and how some work better than others.
You know, for the model of the modern-day Vegas residency, headliner residency, probably goes to Celine Dion at the Coliseum. And she was doing a lot more dates than she has wound up doing. But they built a venue for her to do select dates and bring in a crowd, not only sell tickets in the venue at a premium price, but also bring in the kind of clientele that's going to spend money around the resort.
Yeah.
They'll go to the restaurants, they'll go and maybe they'll go play, they'll go shopping, and they'll bring in a lot of money, ancillary income. She was one of the big ones to perform while she was in her hit-making prime.
Yeah, in her
commercial prime.
Sure.
You could say that Elvis had a lot to do with this in the original format because he was a superstar who came in and performed multiple weeks. You know, and I think a person who should get credit, who doesn't get a lot of credit unless you really look into it, is Carlos Santana, because he was a rock and roller who played at the joint at the Hard Rock Hotel when rockers of his demo weren't really considering Las Vegas that way. He started in, I think it was 09, at the new joint. And when he started playing there, people started taking notice, people in his bracket. The Aerosmiths, and you know, we had a lot of performers who came in. Journey, you know, Guns
I love
Roses,
the residency,
Scorpions,
by the way, it's perfect.
Def Leppard, and he's played a lot of shows, so I think he's another one who's kind of the bait for those. But I think Celine would probably be the tent post in when she opened in 2003 at the Coliseum. They built the room for her, and it paid off.
And it paid off with Seinfeld using the room and obviously Elton John and
exactly.
Some of the other artists that go in there, which I find fascinating.
Rod Stewart
and all that. So it generates all this money for the resorts, but I think the fans are accustomed to going to a great arena and a great experience. And we'll get to that momentarily because Aerosmith's playing at the park,
yep.
Cher over at the park.
Awesome.
So not only are you seeing a great artist, a legendary artist, but a brand new arena, and a lot of fans in town, a lot of locals haven't been to those buildings
exactly.
Just yet.
Well, it's not cheap to go to them. And another one who's at Park Theater right now who's really running the show is Lady Gaga.
Right.
And she's as big as it gets right now. And she's in there. I think the thing about the Park Theater is they've really, really paid top dollar for their artists. First of all, they really pay well. Their booking partners, Live Nation, almost exclusively, although AEG Live has Cher. But Bruno Mars is in that lineup. I think we're going to see some changes in some of the architecture on the Strip. I expect we're going to see some renovations going on in some of these venues to keep up with Park Theater so they can be more versatile, so you can get more comics in there, you can get more non-entertainment.
Yeah.
In some of these places, you can have MMA or lower boxing cards. There's going to be more of that happening this year.
Johnny Katz joins us. You just wrote the column on Virgin to begin the Las Vegas Hard Rock remodel. I love Boz, who's now taking over that property. And
Richard Bosworth.
Richard Bosworth is one of the more unique people I've met because I think this town needs a guy like Boz. The way we had it with George Maloof with the Palms initially,
yeah.
I really believe he's that type of owner and partner who's going to walk the property, shake hands with everyone there, and try to increase the experience. I met my wife at the Hard Rock at the Rolling Stones at the joint, so I'm tied.
You were at that show?
I was at that show, met my wife.
Fire coach.
My kids would not be here today. It's coming on 20 years, so that was a big, that was really, it's interesting.
That was a really big moment.
That was a big moment because who was at that concert? So I'm there right up front. It's a long story. Put it in my book, The Handoff, and when I was there, right up against the stage, and it was Brad Pitt, Gene Simmons, mm-hmm. Jack Nicholson, Eddie Murphy. I looked around the room, Johnny Depp. They were all standing around me. Ben Affleck, Tommy Lee with Pamela. They had their famous moment where they broke up there. Mm-hmm. So my life is connected.
Practically lived.
Yeah, my life is connected through the Hard Rock and the Joint. And now that they're changing and they're going to have a new vibe with Virgin, you've sat down and talked to him. You know what's going to happen there. Talk about the future evolution of the Hard Rock as it moves to Virgin.
Well, I think the thing to keep in mind is they're going through a complete property-wide renovation, complete overhaul, all the guest rooms, most of the familiar entertainment locations are going to be touched. The center bar is going away.
Yeah.
The pool is going to be expanded. The porte-cochere is going to be different. The Hard Rock guitar is coming down. The V and Virgin is going up. I'm interested in the pool deck is going to be a signature amenity. I'm interested in what they do with the Joint. They're going to refresh that and really become a major player once more in the residency game. They're going to have a booking partner, which Boz told me. That puts them in with the Park Theater and with those residencies that we've talked about. Vinyl will become a nightclub. It'll be going away. So that means Raiding the Rock Belt will probably be, it will certainly be off that venue and probably off the property in December, a show that that I really like. It's going to be, and Boz, what he has told me, they're going to move this timeline. What people need to realize is this all starts in earnest the Monday after the Super Bowl Sunday and will continue through until they open it after the presidential election is decided. 4 months of that will be a closed resort. It will be shut down. That means a show like Magic Mike Live needs to make a decision on how they're going to proceed because they want to keep going.
Yeah.
They've talked about keeping that particular venue open during the closing. It's a $200 million overhaul, and it's going to be a complete changeover. Now, initially, people thought that you talk about Bosworth and Boz and him being the face of the hotel, which he is. Originally, people thought that Virgin was buying it and that Richard Branson owned it. Not so.
No.
It's operations.
It's Boz. It's Boz.
Boz is the man who runs the company that is the majority owner, JC Hospitality. And he is the Maloof, but he is the Jackie Gahn of the
I think he's going to be great. I think he's one of the more unique personalities coming into this town. I think he's going to do wonders with that.
I do too. It's going to be a very competitive environment, especially when they open. But Boz has walked the property for a year now, and his team knows what needs to be done and how to do it.
Johnny Katz joins us as we're live from T-Mobile. You read his column every week. He's the man about town. He does an amazing job. The Palms tonight. Stations Casinos. I'm an original owner at Palms Place. I've been looking forward to the Palms coming back for quite some time. And again, I remember the downturn, and I remember the great years of Joe Maloof and George and Gavin and how that place was the hottest property here. What are you hearing about Stations, now the connection, what they're doing with their pool, their nightclub, and all the art that they pumped into that building? It's incredible.
Damien Hirst Art, which is he's a major figure in the art culture. He's done the art in their fantasy suites area.
Yeah.
That whole area, the empathy suites they're calling it now, is the primary one upstairs. That's a staggering scope of that. Just the suites the work they've done there is incredible. It's a giant Chaos nightclub. It's a giant day club nightclub that's opening this weekend. They're going to be programming that day club and nightclub all throughout the weekend and every weekend from here forward. And the hotel, they're promoting it and presenting it as a festival atmosphere. It's not just the Chaos space. It's the Pearl Concert Theater.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have Alicia Keys there this weekend. I'm going to see, hopefully if I can stay upright tonight, I'm going to see Marshmello at 1 a.m. open the nightclub. They're a major player there. Cardi B is one of their headliners. She's a lightning rod for attention. She's got a huge following. She's got a huge social media presence, a huge mass media presence. That's their primary club headliner. And we'll see. You know, I think it's a $690 million renovation.
$690 million into the Palms.
All the way around the Palms.
Yeah.
And we're talking, they've already done the work on the Pearl. They're building out this Chaos nightclub itself. I don't know if they've broken off how much that's going to be, but it's like building Tao or Hakkasan and then some. It's even bigger scale than that on your property. So that's just the nightclub. They're doing overhauling all the restaurants, all the guest rooms. The whole interior of the hotel has been changed, and the lounge has been pulled apart for the new club at the entrance. It's just everywhere you look has been touched, and it's a major investment
for a station, but Station does have the resources to do this. This is not like Boulder Station or Palace Station. This is more like a Cosmopolitan.
That's no doubt. It's huge. I'm happy for all the success and what's going to happen. Wrapping it up with Johnny Katz, walk us through your week or a day in your life when you know that there are residencies you have to see, there are new openings, there's a Vegas Golden Knight game, Marshmallow tonight at 1 in the morning. Where do you pick and choose? Do you want to break news, or do you just want to experience what it's like so you could take it to an audience, especially with social media at the Review Journal? What's your vision every week when you get up to start it?
What we're trying to do, that's a really good question, because it's difficult to have a singular vision in a column that is multimedia, social media. I'm on 3A every day and online all the time. That's really it. A night like tonight is typical. What you do is you just get up, you have your interview set, you have your schedule set, and you're ready for anything. Yesterday was a really good example of this, because we had Britney Spears being, taking herself into a hospital for mental health because she couldn't handle her father's death very well, or her father's illness. Very well, and the temporary demise of her show Domination. That happened. Dan Reynolds today announced that he was having a baby from Imagine Dragons. That was sudden. We had Celine Dion announcing a North American concert tour yesterday with a new album. That was kind of unexpected. So you have to be able to read and react and be able to open up and write any time. Just heard tonight before I came up here that Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club is opening May 2nd over at Link Promenade. I've had, time with him. I'm writing that up right now. I'm going to be seeing them later on tonight at his rap party at the Link. They're going to do a party, and we're going to hang out there before I go out after that. So you have to be able to read and write and absorb and work on the fly. That's it. It has to show motion. You have to show that you're in play. I'm not in the office very much. No news happens in the office. I'm here at T-Mobile Arena now, and I just have to go where the energy is and report it and hope I don't miss anything.
Johnny Katz, finally, let's tie this in as we wrap it up with the Vegas Golden Knights. What they've meant to this town in regards to celebrity. We see people with the siren here. There are celebrities from Mark Davis, the owner of the Raiders, who's here at all the games. When you come to this building and come into the fortress, what fires you up? And especially when you're looking at fans who are so happy and they're rejoicing that we have this product in town.
Well, you know what it is, JT? It's our community all galvanized by this hockey team. And I keep going back to what Wayne Newton said last year when he was here. Wayne's lived here since 1962. Yeah. He knows Vegas. And he said, I would never have imagined in all the time I've lived in Las Vegas that an ice hockey team would have this kind of impact on Las Vegas. He keeps saying ice hockey, not just hockey, ice hockey.
Ice hockey.
And he goes, I can't believe it. He was here, he did the siren during the playoffs last year, and he was blown away. He walked the whole arena.
Concourse, yeah.
Last year when they were making their run, and they were becoming a thing, they were a thing right from the beginning. It was the only thing I've covered in Las Vegas in my career here since 1996 that I couldn't write enough about. I could have written every column, every post, all the time about the Golden Knights, and people would have wanted more.
Gobbled it up, yeah.
And I've not dealt with anything like that. Nobody said, okay, enough with the Knights. Nobody ever said that.
No, it's great because it ties us together. It ties your readers together, everyone you have on social media. It ties me together. My wife's coming here tonight afterwards. Mm-hmm. We're going to go to the Palms. What's happening at the Link? Everything that's going on in town, there's something that's opening up every week, and we count on you for that information ahead of time.
Yeah, I have people tell me all the time they live vicariously through my column, especially my social media feed. And I am. I'm the portal into the places that people normally either don't get to go to, don't have time to go to, or just curious about in and out of Las Vegas, And I love just walking this arena and seeing I see a lot of friends, a lot of our community.
I played golf with the Three Musketeers today. Well, Boz is one of them. John O'Donnell, one of our longest friends. Michael Morton of MB, the great Michael Morton.
So who's the best golfer in that crew?
You know what?
I say Johnny.
Johnny O'Donnell got to a point now where he's playing so much golf that when I jump in with him, I'm blown away. He's getting better, better, and better. So we play once a week or so, and it's just another friendship. I met him at Nine Steakhouse when the Maloofs were there. You met him at that point in time. And now I go over to MB Steak. I love it there. But I wanted to have you on today because this was a special moment. We had Tony Sanchez on from UNLV. We had George McPhee on. This is a gathering spot in this town. And you kind of disappear and go out into the night. But I wanted to make sure you could come up here. And how cool was it that they let us in the booth to
it's
do this?
I keep looking out, man. I keep checking. Isn't
this nice?
The perch up here. Yeah, this is really cool. I like it. I like it up here. This is a cool hang. I'll tell you that, JT.
Thanks for doing this. I appreciate
Anytime,
it.
Anytime, man.
Johnny
Anytime.
Katz, everybody. Appreciate you coming on. We'll see you out. And I promise you, because I stay out late, I will see you at Marshmallow at 1 in the morning. Thank you, Johnny. Appreciate it. There you go. Johnny Katz, appreciate him coming in as the press box is starting to fill up. Thanks so much again, buddy. Appreciate that. When we come back, we're going to reset here at the top of the hour in a few moments. We're going to tell you about this. There's 51 minutes and 50 seconds left in the pregame. So it's 5:53, and Dan Duva is going to come up here. If you're joining us late also, we're going to replay a portion of our George McPhee interview. The general manager of the Vegas Golden Knights joined us a little while ago along with Gary Lawless. And I want to reset with the big story tonight is the return of Marc-Andre Fleury. Fleury needs to be good tonight. I really believe this is big. It's not going to be the end of the world. If he doesn't look great, he lets in an early goal, whatever's going to happen. But if he's able to stand on his head tonight, if he's able to be sharp against the Arizona team that has a lot to play for, I truly believe that's going to help this team and the mojo that they're going to need, because they have everything that they need. They have goal scoring. They have Nate Schmidt on defense. They went out and made a big move on defense, getting one of the great players in all of college hockey to come in via a free agent. So that's a big deal. Everything that's happening here is rolling, but nothing will happen going forward if Marc-Andre Fleury doesn't play like a Hall of Famer. So we'll see what happens here tonight. It's going to be amazing. I've seen the video presentation 3 or 4 times. If you're coming to the game tonight, like you've heard us say, get in here early, because they're going to blow you away. A special video presentation on Fan Appreciation Night. JT the Brick, live from the Fortress at Dan Duva's perch. We got another half hour to go before we get you to the pregame show.